This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
Studio at WTAN with FLA Law live on the radio. As you know, we are the personal injury attorneys from Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes, and we are here with your live legal call-in talk show that we do every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. And of course, this is your opportunity to tune in, call, get your questions answered live over the radio station. I am here myself, Jacqueline Bryant, with my co-host Brian Caulfield, board-certified trial lawyer. He's going to be helping me tonight answer all your questions, so feel free to give us a call. The lines are open. I'm going to give you all the information before we start chatting on how to reach us tonight so that you can get your questions answered. First and foremost, the best way to call in is through the radio station at 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727-441-3000. That's the way that you'll call in to the station. You'll have your question answered live on the air. If you're a little bit shy, don't want to have your voice heard over the station, you can certainly leave comments on our social media platforms. We are streaming live right now on Facebook and YouTube. So if you would like to ask your questions that way, that's also a great way to do it. If you are on Facebook and you're trying to find us, it is Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. Type that into your search bar on Facebook. That's how you'll find us. You should see a little red circle around our profile picture letting you know that we are live right now. And if you have a question, you can just type it right there in the chat on the comment section under the live video, and I will see it. We can read it out, and Brian and I will tackle whatever your question is. Same thing on YouTube. So if you don't have Facebook, you want to ask a question of us, you can certainly do that on YouTube as well. We are live on YouTube. Same name, Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. Now that I've got that out, Brian, would you like to say hello to our listeners?
Well, glad to be back, and hopefully if you have questions, we want everyone to know that the law office is open. You can
Absolutely.
Have those legal questions answered free of charge, and as Jacqueline talked about, our firm practices exclusively in the area of personal injury, wrongful death, and medical malpractice type questions. I've been an attorney for 35 years, so you're free to give us a call and kind of tap into our collective wisdom on the subject of personal injury law in the state of Florida, and we'll try to do our best to answer any questions that you might have.
Absolutely. If you call in right now, the lines are open and it'll put you through. With that being said, I just want to give you the lay of the land. If you've been listening lately, then you know these are kind of the outline of how the show goes, is we talk about some current events and pull different things from the headlines, things that you may have saw on the news, things you may have heard about or read about, and if so, then you may be able to call in and comment on that. If not, we'll definitely read the articles to you, and Brian and I will kind of have some conversation about how these events may play out, who may be liable or responsible in regards to the incidents that occurred, or whether there's even a case at all. Sometimes horrible events happen, but there's nobody there to really pursue or be liable for those situations. So that's kind of what we are going to be talking about tonight. Where's the case? Is there a case? Is there liability there? And maybe some of the different legal issues that might flow out of them once we get into it. So without further ado, let's kind of jump into our first story. I tend to kind of read a little bit for our listeners so they understand what's going on. And then Brian and I will tackle it. So this was a case that happened just a few days ago, and in a place that I really haven't heard of, Matlacha, Florida. You know where Matlacha is, Brian?
I know I've heard of it, but I'm not sure.
Matlacha.
Sounds like it's by the Everglades, doesn't it?
Sounds like it. So down there, unfortunately, there was an 80-year-old woman who was killed and four other people who were injured involving an incident where basically an individual kind of went rogue, if you will, and hit five pedestrians that were sitting at the barbecue place. They were basically enjoying their meal at the restaurant when a 24-year-old man crashed into a parked motorcycle, a moving pickup truck. He hit four people, three men, one woman, between the ages of 50 and 80. the 80-year-old woman unfortunately was pronounced dead at the scene. And the individual who was at the incident basically said it was really just out of a movie. People were yelling, screaming, cars and tables were flying everywhere. They really don't exactly know, you know, what caused the individual to do what he did. And of course, the investigation is still being investigated by Lee County Sheriff's Office and the Florida Highway Patrol. So obviously, I'm going to kind of have a little bit of, you know, hypothetical here, because we don't quite know exactly what happened. It could have been intentional. Maybe there was some sort of mental health psychotic break involved. How does that play into liability? You know, there's multiple people here, serious injuries, one death. How do you approach this, Brian?
Yeah, I think as you talked about, the key is to try to determine why this accident took place, and in fact, if it can be defined as an accident.
Sure.
That's going to be the really turning point on what kind of coverages are available for the individuals who are a victim of this. But first of all, we should let people know kind of a little known fact. If the driver is able to establish that their vehicle had a sudden and unexpected brake failure, you can drive through a whole schoolyard of children and take them all out, and you have no liability.
Is a possibility here.
And we're a system that is created on fault. In other words, in order for this individual to be responsible for a negligent act that they failed to use reasonable care, you know, you're going to have to prove that that was an accident. And if you can prove it was an accident, then quite frankly, that's usually best for everyone involved, because there's going to be insurance coverages available, both from the at-fault driver, the owner of the vehicle, if it was someone different. It allows other people that were hit as pedestrians to perhaps access their own auto insurance as well. Health insurance is going to be something you're going to be able to access regardless of whether it's intentional.
Right.
But if the act itself was intentional, then you've got a whole different series of inquiries. And the first problem for all the injured people is, if it can be proven that this was not an accident and the person intended to do this, even if they had coverage on their vehicle, that coverage is likely not going to pay, because
exclusions.
There's an exclusion for intentional acts of the insured. So the investigation obviously will be key in the case, but certainly when you hear something like that, you know, it all comes back to me, to the number one message I try to get across when I'm talking to people that don't do for a living what I do every day, and that is uninsured motorist coverage, UM. And you say, well, what are you talking about, UM? I thought we were talking about people getting hit as a pedestrian that were sitting on benches and eating some barbecue.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we are talking about. And uninsured motorist coverage, also known as UM, it sticks to you, basically. Think of it that way. When you go out,
it follows you wherever you go.
Yeah, and if you're out sitting at a table at a roadside restaurant, if you're walking down the sidewalk, if you're a pedestrian, a bicyclist, a skateboarder, if you have uninsured motorist coverage on your own car, that coverage sticks to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there and you're hit, like in this kind of a situation, even though you're not in your own car could be parked 20 miles away, you actually get to access your own uninsured motorist coverage, which also means underinsured motorist coverage. So as I say each time on the show, if you don't take anything else from this conversation, please take this. You must have uninsured motorist coverage. And don't blow that thought off and say, well, you know, I got a newer car, it's financed by the bank, I got full coverage. We hear it all the time.
You likely do not,
You likely don't have uninsured motorist coverage. There's nothing about having a newer car or a leased car that requires uninsured motorist coverage to be bought by you. It takes an affirmative act by you to make sure that you buy that. It protects you and your family members, protects your children when they go off to college. It is just the most critical insurance mistake you can make, is if you reject uninsured motorist coverage. And if any agent gives you advice that says, do you have health insurance? If you do, you don't need UM. horrible insurance advice.
Absolutely.
Just so please.
If you've been a listener, then you have heard this many, many times, and hopefully you're telling your family members and your friends the same exact thing. We can't really stress that enough. And even if, let's say this is a situation where the person knew that there was something wrong with their brakes, the brakes failed, there was clear negligence, and we're not talking about necessarily a exclusion on the BI coverage, but maybe there's just not enough coverage to go around. I mean, clearly we have one person who died.
Right.
And so there's multiple injured parties here, and what you're probably going to be looking at is some global mediation of some kind or some sort of division of trying to divide up a policy in that scenario where there was maybe bodily injury coverage. We don't know what the situation is here, but let's say there is coverage. The individual was negligent and it's only 10. A $10,000 policy.
I mean, yeah. 10, even if it's 100,
yeah.
You know, it's like you said, you're vying with everyone else for that limited coverage. And, you know, inevitably the insurance company that's responsible says, hey, we've only got $100,000, all six of you and the representatives of the dead person, please come to a particular conference room at our law office and we're going to split up the coverage.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can find yourself in a situation where you're not made whole, where even though the other side had coverage and offers it all, it's not nearly enough to pay for the damages that you sustain. And if you had that uninsured motorist coverage that we talked about, it also means underinsured motorist coverage. And so that means that you take from the at-fault driver the maximum you can get from them, and then you get to go back to your own company and say, hey, the other driver was underinsured.
Exactly.
They didn't have enough money to fully pay for my damages. I bought underinsured motorist coverage, also known as UM, same as uninsured motorist coverage. It protects you in that event as well. So, again, if you don't have UM, you've made the biggest auto insurance mistake you can make in the state of Florida.
Definitely. And if you haven't heard it before, you'll probably hear it time and time again as we go throughout this show. So like we always say, if you have questions, you want us to review your policy, feel free to do that. Reach out to us at the office. Don't call the station. Call the office. That's 727-796-8282 if you have questions about your insurance or adding the UM coverage and would like us to take a look at your policy or your deck sheet. Moving on, before we take a break, I want to ask you about another article that we had here recently. Try to pull them from Florida whenever I can. This was in Miami-Dade. Similar situation because we're talking about a potential intentional act. So looks like last month, a man was shot after a car accident in Northwest Miami-Dade. Police say that a car crash had occurred on Northwest 36th Street down in Miami. It evolved into an argument after one of the drivers got out of the car after the car crash, pulled out a firearm, and shot the other driver. One of the witnesses to the incident has stated that he's lived in this area for 30 years. The violence has escalated once the bar opened up on the corner of that street. At least once or twice a month, there's a shooting there, he says. And this used to be a really good neighborhood. Unfortunately, the man who was originally stable did later die from his injuries. So, we have a case where there was a car accident, escalated into an altercation. Now one of the drivers is deceased. Is there a case here? And now that we have some facts about this being by a bar, the bar maybe having lots of other violent incidents, maybe they were patrons of that bar. We don't have a lot of information there, but let's pretend that we do. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough. That's a tough call. You know, you're going to have.
Where can you go?
Well, you're going to have to go back, and you're going to have to look at a couple of things.
Sure.
You're going to have to look to see whether or not the conduct of the bar created a foreseeable zone of risk to adjacent patrons. And then you're going to have to look at the foreseeability aspect, whether or not they've had other similar types of problems so that they were on notice that many of their patrons are packing guns and getting into disturbances on their way off the property. So I think a lot of it's going to, you know, be involved with the connection to the land.
Right.
And so that'll certainly be an issue. And, you know, it would be a very difficult type case, but it's not an impossible case, depending on what the facts bear out.
Right.
And those are the kind of cases you have to investigate quite a bit, because the last kind of case I had against a bar, you know, involved an off-duty worker who had come back to work on her own time, and she was in the process of celebrating her birthday when she noticed a patron who she had kicked out the night before while she was working.
Okay.
And, you know, told her coworkers, hey, you need to get him out of here. He's bad news. And they said, he's trying. And she was happy to see that a few minutes later, he was ushered out and he disappeared into the night, only to about 15 minutes later see him return to the bar. And there wasn't any bouncer. And so he came right back into the bar, and she again saw him and told her coworkers. She got up to go over to tell her coworkers to get him out of the bar, that he's a bad actor and had caused problems before. And he saw her get up and come over and, you know, ask the other workers to get him out of the bar. And what did he do? He attacked her with a knife that he had actually bought when he left the bar.
The first time.
Yeah, he went down the street and went to a little grocery store and bought a 12-inch fishing fillet knife, since they're on the beach. You know, a lot of the convenience stores have a little fishing section. And he actually told the clerk, watch me, you're going to see me on the news tonight. And then he came back to the bar and ended up stabbing our client. And so in that particular case, we were able to develop evidence that this individual had been violent at that bar before, that he had been kicked out that night, and that the procedure was, once he's kicked out that night, he's not supposed to be let back in. And that this particular bar, although the owner owned five other beach bars, most of which had a security guard or a bouncer, they decided not to have one at this particular bar just to save money. And that gave him an absolute free rein to walk back in. And we further established that the time for the police calls to that bar was, like, on average, less than 3 minutes. You know, once the police are called, which would have been less time than it took the second time he came back in before he attacked my client. So we developed good evidence on that and ultimately went to a jury trial here in Clearwater. And, you know, the bar was found, you know, liable for my client's stabbing injury. So, those are tougher cases.
If we tweak those facts and kind of make it similar to this news article, let's say the incident between your client and this gentleman spilled out into the parking lot, somebody gets into their car, there's a crash, then ultimately the stabbing happens. Do you feel like that changes the liability for the bar?
Well, you know, it's kind of like, remember the old days of law school, they call it an intervening cause.
Yes.
How many chains down the link does it have to get where you're able to extend the liability back?
Yeah.
Or does someone, when they commit a negligent act, where does it stop?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, if you have a fender bender and run into somebody, and unfortunately they were on their airport to fly to Paris to close one of the biggest business deals of their career, and that trip was lost, and they lost $20 million. You know, you start getting into all these different analyses, and that's what the law is for. I mean, there's, you know, there's so many different permutations of fact patterns. Sometimes there's answers, and there's actually been the exact similar type case before, but many times there isn't, and that's where judges and juries do their work, guided by the law, to determine whether or not there's any civil liability on anybody's part.
Right. And I think the takeaway with these, because these cases are so unique, and as Brian has stated, there's so many different facts that we don't know and things that would need to be investigated in a scenario like this one, your best bet is to call an attorney right away. Give us a call. If you're not sure, there's so many unknowns, but there's, you know, something that you know that you were injured due to no fault of your own, don't, you know, decide your own facts and think that there's no case there. Give us a call. Let us evaluate the claim for you. You know, someone that has the experience like Brian and myself who can really take a look at the facts. Doesn't always mean that there is going to be a case, but don't count yourself out before you even make the call.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So before we take a break, I'm going to get into this shorter one, and then we will take a short commercial break and have a few more articles that we can go over after that. But this was one we talked about before, Lori and I, but at the time we didn't know who the individual was, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I didn't put it on our outline, so this is a bonus one.
A bonus question.
A bonus one. There, unfortunately, was a really sad incident a couple months ago at the Opal Sands. I don't know if you've heard about it, but a four-year-old boy was critically injured when he was hit by the resort valet. And it turns out that the young boy, unfortunately, was the son of a Major League Baseball pitcher, Eric Swanson, who pitches for the Blue Jays. And apparently, they were here for spring training, maybe. I'm not entirely sure, but his son was down in All Children's Hospital for quite some time. And so the question becomes, it's Opal Sands was where the incident occurred, the valet driver who was driving the truck that hit the young boy, and then there's the owner of the truck that potentially gave it to the valet driver. Is there any liability on Opal Sands, you think?
Certainly, and that's the first and primary place you would look, because their driver...
We don't even know if the valet company works for Opal Sands, so yeah, I want to clarify that.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, because like you said, a lot of times these so-called independent contracting type companies come in for restaurants and say, hey, we'll run your valet service for you. And that would cause the establishment to say, look, hey, we don't have anything to do with this. I mean, you got to go after the valet company. It was their employee, not ours. We don't have any control over that person. I think that's going to be kind of a hard sell, but that certainly is an aspect to look in. But assuming that the person is actually an employee of Opal Sands, then clearly there's going to be a chance for there to be some liability on the part of the valet driver. Obviously, the other question that's going to get raised in any time you have a case like that is the parental supervision.
Yeah.
Where was the parent?
Where was the baseball player and their family or whomever was with him?
Yeah, and that particular accident that took place, really interesting as well, because it's kind of a unique thing that they do down here in Florida. They create these very large rises to get your car up to the area where the valet is going to be.
I didn't think about that, yeah.
And they're really interesting, and you don't really see them everywhere else because a lot of times here in Florida, you don't have lots of land to deal with, and they're building up.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get that car up to a particular height very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of space to get it up there, so it's not a gradual incline like you might see. It can sometimes be a pretty steep angle.
Yeah.
And so that's certainly an issue as I look at this accident as well, because I think the driver, if I'm remembering from what I read, I think the driver made some statements like, look, I couldn't see the kid. He was below,
I didn't think about that.
He was below
there.
The height of my hood. And when you're pulling up this particular incline, it really, because of the vast incline your vehicle is on, it's taking away a lot. So I think there's even an issue about parking lot design in this particular accident. So, hopefully, at least from what I heard, it sounded terrible at the beginning of the case, but hopefully that young child's able to make a complete recovery.
Well, it says he was air flighted to All Children's, and that's really all we know about the severity of his injury. So
yeah, but certainly that's absolutely a case that's going to have all kinds of aspect of auto insurance, health insurance, premises liability insurance, possible independent contractor issues with. So there's. That's enough to write a bunch of law school exam questions about.
Right. Is there any liability on the poor Ford Expedition owner who just simply dropped his keys off to the valet and gave it to the valet driver?
Well, that's going to be interesting, because they're going to say, hey, no, once I drop it to the valet, I don't have any responsibility for it.
Right. Similar to like when you take your car to a mechanic, right?
Yeah. But, it might be a situation, though, where the vehicle... I don't know if that vehicle is a rent a car.
Right.
So that's another.
Could be. It's 2024. So.
Yeah, that's another interesting issue. Someone, here from bringing their family to watch their husband play professional baseball here during spring training. So, that case certainly was a tragic case. Hopefully, some of the information I heard was that it was an orthopedic injury to like the arm, and hopefully not a head injury. And hopefully that young child is. doing well and on their way to recuperating fully.
Hopefully he is. And like I said, this was a while back, so hopefully he's doing a lot better now. That's a good time for us to take a short break. The lines are open, folks. We are here to answer your legal questions here live on the radio. So after the break, give us a call at 727-441-3000 or drop a comment in our Facebook chat and we'll get those answered for you. We'll be back shortly.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
In 1955, the law firm now known as Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes made a decision. Instead of taking whatever cases came through their doors, they decided to focus specifically on personal injury. 64 years later, the law firm is one of Clearwater's longest-running personal injury firms. Available 24 hours a day with offices in Clearwater and throughout Tampa Bay, they're ready to put decades of experience to work for you if you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident or injured due to someone's negligence or recklessness. If you feel overwhelmed, uncertain, or unsure about your next steps after being involved in an accident or after a loved one sustained serious injuries due to someone else's negligence, call Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes at 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. That's 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. Non-attorney spokesman.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And we are back from the break, folks. This is FLA Law live on the radio. We're the attorneys of Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, Noyes, personal injury attorneys here in the Tampa Bay area. We have been chatting since 5 about some local car accident and personal injury related news and current events and discussing some of the liability in the ways that they may play out in the legal system and whether there can be claims that can be made. Off the air, I'm going to put him back on the spot. Ed had asked a really good question. I think that'd be good for our listeners. And Brian even chimed in that he had similar case to that. So I think we should ask that question on the air, Ed.
Well, I was just wondering, because of COVID, that restaurants needed to be outside and we're starting to use more and more of the area that was in front or the side of the restaurant, whatever. Yeah. But it happens that it gets closer and closer to the roadways now.
Right.
And now they're putting umbrellas out there and stuff like that and giving you a cover. It just seems to me that these restaurants, these tables are getting closer and closer to the roadway. And we all know accidents happen. You know, like you said, the brakes could fail. But the difference between just hopping up on that curb and going 5 or 6 feet and hitting nothing to hitting 4 or 5 tables.
Exactly.
Whereas when you're in the brick and mortar side, you're safe by 4 walls.
Much more protection, right. What's your take on that, Brian?
Yeah, no, I think that's clearly a case. And there's an established body of law. And one of the first kind of businesses really to be suffering that type of liability were convenience stores, because believe it or not, across the USA, there's plenty of instances where people hit the gas instead of the brake and people put it in drive instead of reverse and they drive into their local convenience store quite literally. And people have lost their legs, patrons in there. And so that happens so frequently that they were able to establish a foreseeability. So that is that said, the 7-Elevens of the world have had plenty of these types of accidents. So now when you see these new convenience stores built, you'll see that they have a really strong barrier to prevent a car from
the concrete posts, the stadiums and stuff.
Yep. And that's like what you talked about when COVID hit and everybody moved outside. It had them literally, like you said, right up on the sidewalk to the edge of the roadway. Right. I mean, literally to the edge of the roadway. And so you create a problem depending on how the parking is. And if there isn't any protection between where those cars park and the patrons outside there eating, you can in fact have the exact same type of accident. And I handled one of these cases where they basically made a front porch and put it out there right up to where they had the parking lot, people pulling in, head in parking, and didn't have anything to stop someone from, you know, driving through the parking lot.
People, yeah.
And unfortunately, the person was drunk, as you could expect. The patron might be leaving and, you know, made a mistake. And unfortunately, it was a foreseeable mistake. That is, you know, that there's certainly plenty of notice to that restaurant that the way they were conducting their business put their patron seated there at a foreseeable zone of risk. And so you absolutely can have a case in that. And I've looked as well, like, you know, I see it in St. Petersburg quite a bit, because you don't see some of the businesses retreating after COVID has gone away and it's no longer, you know, the threat it once was. You know, sometimes it doesn't look as though there's been any retreat on where they're actually having the tables. And and I think, you know, ultimately that's the kind of situation where you're setting people up for a foreseeable accident. So
it's almost like, oh, we've found something new. Let's take advantage of it and keep it going. But, and look, no lattice decorative fence is going to stop a car.
I mean, no, you're exactly right. You need to have what you see at the new convenience stores.
Yeah.
Those are specifically designed and spaced at a particular width so that they have the best chance of stopping a car intrusion. As you said, look, there's always some accidents that you can't stop. But there's been such a body of law developed, and there's been so many similar occurrences. The restaurant industry is on notice at this point that if you're going to create a foreseeable zone of risk, you do so at your own peril, because you might be found partially at fault for an accident that ends up injuring one of your customers.
I'm surprised the insurance companies went for it, you know, without having proper protection, because, you know, you are basically out there with nothing protecting your patrons out there.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the insurance companies that are insuring these restaurants, you would think that maybe if they came and did an inspection the restaurant.
Right, you're assuming that they know about it.
Yeah, they probably don't.
Well, they inspect for everything else, for crying out loud, right?
Yeah,
I remember researching that years ago, and it wasn't a restaurant, though, but there was some other, maybe it was signage or something, it had to be set back a certain amount of feet from the roadway. And of course, in the case that I was researching, it wasn't in the guidelines that were required, and it was closer to the road, and the person that got injured, you know, had a case because of that. And so I would think that maybe there is a lot of case law about what's, you know, appropriate there. And I think about, we mentioned St. Pete, right by the pier there, where there's, I don't know, is that Beach Drive? There's so many restaurants.
Oh yeah, and there, that's
the chair is literally sitting right on the corner.
About, that's what I know. And actually, I just used the valet there Sunday night, and it was amazing to me how close the cars are in contact almost with people that are sitting, not even looking behind them, so they don't even have any chance, you know, if a car starts to go out of control.
Right.
So yeah, you know what they call that?
What's that?
An accident waiting to happen. That's really what we call it.
Is there like a drum sound we can do that?
Yeah, we probably need to have
sound effects.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, and maybe they suspect that no one's driving at that high rate of speed in that area, but you can never, especially when you said there's alcohol, people are leaving bars, there's drinking involved, you can never really predict what could happen there. So that was a great question, Ed. Again, lines are open. If you have a similar question or a discussion, comment, a statement that you'd like to make in regards to the conversation that we're having, feel free to give us a call. The number is 727-441-3000. Of course, you have Brian Caulfield and myself here to answer those questions, and we'll try to lead you in the right direction if it's a question pertaining to personal injury.
Well, did you know, interestingly enough, that Google says that at least one car crashes into a 7-Eleven every day on average here in the United States.
Every day. Oh my gosh.
So certainly hard for 7-Eleven to claim that that's not foreseeable, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have guessed that. I would have thought maybe every month, but not every day. My goodness. Especially here in Florida, when you have an elderly population that's very large, and things like that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, next article, let's see what this one's about. This is titled, Florida Woman Killed by Her Own Car in Freak Accident. Let's see if there's a case. So this is a 59-year-old Florida woman who was unfortunately killed on Monday night when she became pinned by her own vehicle in a freak accident, troopers say. Essentially, the fatal incident happened late at night in Flagler County. The woman, they believe, may have failed to put her own vehicle in park as she got out of it. The SUV rolled forward, collided with a tree on the driver's side, and the impact pinned the woman between the door and the driver's side of the SUV. And unfortunately, she was pronounced dead at the scene. Is there any kind of pit or suit you can have here, Brian, when you've got one of these freak accidents?
Well, depends on an investigation. You're going to have to determine, you know, and obviously the difficulty in a case like this is when the driver is alone. You don't have anyone to testify about exactly what she did to attempt to put the vehicle into park. But certainly, you know, that case implicates what we call product liability law. You're going to want to look to see whether or not there's some defect in that particular vehicle that allows it not to go fully into park or allows it to jump out of park. That's certainly probably, that's the primary place you're going to be looking to determine, you know, if there is some type of liability. But, you know, there's all kinds of freak accidents involving cars and boats. Sure. I know there was another one here recently, I believe, where it was I believe it was a wife of a very prominent businessman. In the industry. She was in a Tesla, and she managed to put the car into reverse rather than drive, and was making a three-point turn as she's backing out and hit the gas, and ended up, her Tesla went right into a lake.
Oh, wow.
On her own property, and she ended up drowning in her own vehicle.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's all kinds of, you know, accidents that can take place.
Yeah, I'm terrified of the Teslas. The more and more I hear about them, I mean, when they had those freezes up north and people were stuck in their cars, the batteries die, they can't get out. It's like, or the car starts to update, and if you're in the car while it's updating, you can't get out of the car.
I do not really. I know I've read some of the stories about that.
It's just ridiculous.
I'm not convinced. I'm still clinging on to my my gas powered vehicle, and I think I always will.
Yeah, I mean, or a hybrid. I have a hybrid. I can deal with that. But yeah, the Teslas are kind of terrifying. But with that being said, I want to go back to this. So we don't know what really happened. Did she? Was it user error? Was it an error with the SUV? They don't give us a make or model. We don't know anything about it. But I personally know that I have an SUV that has had tons of recalls, and like it just seems like in a matter of months I keep getting a call about this needs to be replaced, that needs to be replaced, this needs to be fixed. Usually they're minor things like a windshield wiper or something needs to be filed down on the door because it's catching on stuff, but whatever. But it doesn't matter, I guess, in that regard. But let's say she had gotten some sort of a recall and there was something wrong with this park brake, but she hadn't gotten the notice yet, maybe. You know, is that something that there could potentially be liability here if her family calls you? Says, Mr. Caulfield, is there anything we can do? And they say, we just got this notice in the mail from a recall, and she died, but there was something wrong with this brake or whatever, the park.
Yeah, no, that's certainly the way that most of those cases turn into liability is when there is a known defect.
Sure.
And unfortunately, sometimes the companies actually resist getting the word out to people.
Right.
You know, I was just at a seminar, and, you know, they had these CPAP machines that were manufactured by Philips.
Okay.
And, you know, they actually had like a foam that was designed to help keep the noise down for the CPAP user. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this foam degraded over time and it had cancer-causing toxins. And it was known. And yet they resisted and resisted getting the word out. And, and unfortunately, people ended up dying as a result because, you know, look, there's plenty of evidence. And, you know, all we need to do is look at Boeing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you have a 737 that you decide that you're trying to compete with Airbus and you need to have a more efficient engine, but that bigger engine doesn't fit underneath the wing because the plane's not high enough, we'll just go ahead and move the engine forward so it's sticking out the front of the wing. Totally changes the configuration of the way that, that thing climbs. It wants to, you know, put its nose up and stall. And so they go ahead and put some software in there and don't make everybody aware of it that is designed to counteract that by, you know, tipping the nose of the plane down. Make a long story short, because they were trying to save money and not have to, you know, have pilots go back and get all this new retraining, they basically worked the system and said, oh, it's not that really a big a change, so we shouldn't have to re-educate everyone. Well, you know, we'll put this software in here and this will take care of it. And and so little did these pilots know, they were, you know, they're getting into something that they don't have the proper training on, and, you know, we end up with these kinds of, you know, crashes. So it is frustrating to see, but, you know, one thing that seems to be consistent, you don't ever see, you know, corporate malfeasance. You don't see anybody going to jail for that.
Yeah, ironically, you never do, and you never hear about it. If you do, it's all quietly. It doesn't really make the news. So I wanted to comment because sometimes accidents can occur, and the other party, the at-fault driver, may claim that something went wrong with their vehicle. As Brian mentioned, if the brakes failed, it was sudden and unexpected. Again, I don't think that our listeners should take that to assume, well, they told me at the scene that their car was having some sort of issue or brake failure, and so does that mean that I can't pursue them? Not necessarily. You know, you should always contact us and ask your questions. Let us evaluate the case, because that was a similar case I had where the woman told my client that she had lost control of her steering unexpectedly, that something just went haywire, and she had no idea how to control the car. The steering wheel went topsy-turvy, and she thinks that it may be a recall issue or something. All this is said, you know, at the scene. She's kind of laying the groundwork there, and my client initially kind of went with it and thought, well, she couldn't have, there's nothing she could have done, you know, to prevent this accident. And but fortunately, my client was smart enough to continue their treatment and then eventually give us a call, and we were able to disprove that claim that this person was making, that somehow she just lost control of her vehicle, when that turned out not to be true. So don't let that discourage you. If you hear something like that, a scene and driver just says, oh, I'm sorry, I lost control, there's nothing I could do. Don't assume that that's the case, and let it be properly investigated by experienced personal injury attorneys like ourselves. Right. So with that being said, I don't think there's much more that we can say about that poor woman who got pinned between the tree, other than maybe she can get PIP benefits. You know, it was a car accident. Her family may be able to get the death benefits from the PIP.
Yeah, I think they will.
But I don't even think you get the full 10, right? I think it's just a
$5,000.
Yeah, which is bogus. Why wouldn't they just pay the full 10? I never understood that part of it. But be that as it may, even if there's no products liability claim, the family may be still entitled to $5,000 in death benefits under the PIP coverage. So there's this last article I want to touch base with you before we get close to the end of the show. We may have a little time to talk about some PIP issues, but this was a crash in St. Petersburg. It happened a while back, but I think it finally escalated to the point where the driver was arrested. But apparently there was a PSTA trolley driver who was recently arrested for a crash that was caused in St. Pete, where the 15-year-old pedestrian was critically injured. And basically what happened was, based on the investigation of the St. Pete Police Department, there was a young girl who had gotten off of the Sunrunner bus, so which is like that new beach line that they have down there. And she was getting out, crossing the street, when there was a trolley who was approaching, and this trolley was driven by Miss Rogers, who saw the light changing from green to yellow and then to red. And according to the police affidavit, the defendant made a conscious decision to increase the speed of the trolley, continue eastbound through the intersection of A Street at the traffic signal with a solid, steady red. Defendant had a wanton disregard for the safety of the persons in the roadway and the persons on the trolley as she increased her speed to go through the traffic signal when she had the opportunity and duty to stop before getting to the stop bar. Apparently, the trolley rushed through the intersection and eventually struck the teenager who was crossing the street. Because of her blatant disregard, according to the affidavit, she was fired by PSTA, but she apparently is appealing it through her union rep. And she is in Pinellas County Jail at the moment. So this kind of brings up several issues in the law that I wanted to talk to you about, because this trolley driver technically would be employed by PSTA. So it's similar and not much different from what we would think of as a city bus. Although it's shaped like a trolley, it's a city bus, and they're owned and operated by PSTA. So we can argue that this person is likely employed by PSTA, well, at the time of the accident. So that brings up the question of vicarious liability of her employer, and also the sovereign immunity of the employer that she has. And these are two big legal phrases that our listeners probably have no idea what I'm talking about. So maybe we can take them in steps and explain to our listeners what it would mean if they were involved in an incident similar to this involving a PSTA bus, and how that would come into play for the responsibility or liability of PSTA.
Yeah, any time that you're out on the roadway, it's not going to take you very long to identify a vehicle that is owned by a city or by the state or by the county. As you drive it, you're just say on your way to work, you might see a city of Clearwater utility truck, and then you might see a urban forestry truck, and then you might see a dump truck, and then you'd see a city of Clearwater police officer. All of these vehicles being owned by a state or one of its political subdivisions, a city, county, or town, they are basically owned by what we call a sovereign. That is, the owners, the cities, the towns, the state, has what's known as sovereign immunity. And that's basically something that kind of comes over from old English common law that said the king cannot be liable unless the king permits himself to be liable.
Right.
And in Florida, we have what's known as sovereign immunity. So the sovereigns are only liable up to the limits that they allow. And that's 200.
And what are those limits?
Yeah, that's like $200,000. There are some exceptions and ways that you can get around that sometimes by getting what's called a claims bill. Sovereign immunity protects the worker, and you're not allowed to sue the worker individually. You have to sue the county, except in the case you just outlined, that's a big exception.
Yeah.
And some of the reason you heard those words willful and wanton is because they're looking to establish a criminal liability on the part of that driver, and that driver loses their sovereign immunity when they're grossly negligent. So that driver can now be sued individually.
Right.
In addition, and then you can look for punitive damages from that particular person. And so that'll involve some really interesting things as to whether or not there could be somehow liability for punitive damages vicariously through the city. So that's a very interesting area of the law, but people are shocked to hear that, you mean I can get hit by a police officer, I can get hit by a city employee, they can cause me $500,000 in medical bills, and I can only sue them for up to $200,000.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, and in most cases, that's the truth.
Right.
It's a interesting kind of quirk in the law that really hasn't kept up with the times. They did actually raise the amount that you could be liable for, the city or the state, but it's still woefully too low.
Right. And I remember, and I don't have the article in front of me, I think I talked about it with Matthew Noyes once on the show. There was a bill that was going up, I want to say this last session, and I didn't hear more about it, so I'm assuming that means it failed, but they were trying to further limit the caps, and they also were trying to decrease the attorney's fees to some obscene number, like 15% or something like that. And I said, well, people already have a hard time taking these cases at 25%. You are now further limiting people's access to courts by, decreasing those fees even further. And the cap, it was somewhere, I want to say half of what it is now, but I don't have the article. But fortunately, I haven't heard much more about it, so I'm thinking that those laws did not pass in this session. But something to definitely keep on your radar, because they are, after this huge tort reform bill that passed last year, we see that there's a concerted effort by our legislature and government in the state of Florida to limit the rights of those that have been injured in our state. So you definitely want to keep an eye on what's going on in your local government and in Tallahassee, because the laws are changing. And the claims bill, as Brian mentioned, is very difficult to achieve. And it can, I think, I just saw a case, this local Pasco young man who had a serious brain injury, has to have like home health care and 24-hour aid, got a verdict in Pasco for maybe $2 million, and they sent him a check for $180,000 or something like that. And it took him 8 years to get the claims bill. They finally got it this year, I believe, and they awarded him they reached an agreement, I should say. And so they were able to go ahead and pay that out. But it's just ridiculous.
And that's the exception to the rule.
Exactly right. Exactly. And so the fact that that's even something that people can say, well, we can try to claim, you know, that's very, very few and far between that will ever, you know, be
achieved. Well, it's sad what goes on in the legislature, because, you know, the way they try to tackle things is by saying, let's just cut the attorney fee, and then we'll cut the limit that people get to $100,000 and cut the attorney fee to 15%.
Yeah.
And
to what end?
Why are they protecting a negligent party that's caused injury to other people? And they think the way to do away with that and make this a safer world is by making it impossible for the victim of negligence to make a recovery in the case. It's an unbelievable way to approach, you know, a problem of, you know, negligent and careless driving. Just to say, well, let's just take away any way that a victim can get compensated. And unfortunately, a lot of this happens and people are asleep and don't know what's going on up in the legislature. It's
absolutely
fascinating to me.
I had a client ask me today, well, how long has PIP been in place in this state? Is this a new thing? I said, oh no, it's not new at all. Let me explain it to you.
And that's ridiculous. Yeah. If you think about it, that's been around since like 1973.
Exactly. I said,
and we still have $10,000?
Yeah.
The same amount as in 1973? I mean, you can see how PIP should be at least, multiple times 10,000 now, just to keep up with inflation. It's an amazing thing to watch.
And then the mandatory BI bill has made it to the governor several times, and it continues to be vetoed.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing you said. Made it to the governor, meaning that both the House and the Senate said that there should be mandatory bodily injury liability coverage in Florida, but the governor said, no, I'm not going to do that. Why? Yeah. His friends at the insurance companies don't want to have to sell mandatory coverage to everybody.
Right.
So
right.
It's just yet another way that the governor has failed his constituents.
Definitely have to pay attention to the laws and what's going on around us, folks. And you feel like you may not need it until it happens to you or your family members and loved ones. So certainly give us a call if you have any questions. The show is now winding down, so unfortunately we can't take any more calls tonight. But we are here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. We are able to answer your questions live on the air next week. So definitely tune in on the radio, WTAN 106.1 FM. Keep watching us live every Tuesday at 5 on Facebook. But if you have a burning question that can't wait till next week, you can always call us at the office. The number is 727-796-8282. You can find us online at voiceoftheinjured.com or usalaw.com. That's the best way for you to look up our bios, find out what we're all about and what kind of cases we can help you with. As I said, folks, we are here every Tuesday at 5. We will see you next week. We have a real estate attorney who will be coming on the air to answer your questions about real estate law. Something new and different, so definitely tune in next week, and we'll see you at 5.
WTAN Clearwater,
FM 106.1,
WDCF Dade City,
FM 102.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance. I'm Monica Ricks. Senators will convene soon for an historic impeachment trial after receiving articles of impeachment today against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. CBS's Allison Keyes reports.
Tennessee Republican Representative Mark Green, a House impeachment manager, read the articles on the Senate floor.
Alejandro Nicholas Mayorkas, Secretary of